When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. The presidential primary, always fun, always entertaining. New Hampshire, always It's interesting to watch candidates when they actually have to talk to real people, which is why I love New Hampshire, Iowa. I love that kind of early feel because you get to see people basically tripping over themselves. You know, Vivek Ramaswamy, for instance, literally almost got crushed by his own sign. I had a big truth sign and it just kind of fell out, toppled over on top of him. That would have been fun to see. That would have been very interesting to be a part of. But, you know, I've been looking at the Pence-Trump divide, and Pence, you know, gave his spiel today on, he called populism a road to ruin, and went on this whole thing about, you know, are we going to be the party of Reagan, or are we going to be the party of populism, this new populism, and I couldn't help but think. And this is one of those weird kind of moments. I couldn't help to think that is this Pence trying to buy his soul back? Is this him trying to, because he had to sell it to be Trump's number two. It's an interesting spiel he did today. The entire speech was dedicated to what he called a fundamental and unbridgeable divide within the Republican Party. And you go, really? But he put it in this frame of, you know, are we going to be good conservatives? You know, like Ronald Reagan would know, you know, the old Gipper. Or are we going to be, you know, populist? And I don't see it that in those frames. I see it as, is the Republican Party going to be a functional party that actually has, I don't know, a platform with ideas and vision and leadership goals and policies that they want to enact, or are they going to be the people who want to destroy stuff? And look, you've got the Trump crowd, tear things down, destroy things. That's them. No real good ideas. And the ideas that they do have are never going to happen. It's just one of these weird kind of moments. Now, Trump on the other side is saying, you know, going deeper in the populism direction. And look, I would love to have someone even stronger on trade than Biden has been. I think Biden has been okay. But Trump's saying we're doubling down, harsher trade policies. And I'm going, I'd like to see that in writing. Since all of the policies you talked about in 2015 and 2016, we then found out didn't actually exist. You know, like that healthcare plan that was going to be really, really cheap and cover everybody for everything. And it was going to be, it was utopia. We now find out they didn't actually have any real plan. It was just repeal and, well, pretend. He's also talking about more tax cuts. And this is one of those things that's real popular. You know, everyone's like, yeah, tax cuts. But here's the thing, working people, he's not talking about you. And this is, again, when will we stop being Charlie Brown? When will we realize we're never getting the tax cut football? It's never coming to us. In fact, all of the Trump tax cuts, eventually, not only do we not get them anymore, we end up having to pay them back down the road with interest. Now, our wealthy friends, those are permanent. Now, the weird thing for me is I go to this place, and we've talked about this numerous times. I think the policies that Biden has ushered through legislatively, because he understands the process and actually got stuff done, infrastructure bill, Inflation Reduction Act, the rescue plan, moving in the right direction, using the regulatory bodies to help workers organize and do some positive stuff on that front. Lots of accomplishments. You can actually fill a box with these are the accomplishments. Now, the Trump side, they had one legislative victory, one thing, tax cuts for rich people. So when I see this poll over at the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class, or it used to be the newspaper of the investor class before Rupert Murdoch and the F Channel people got a hold of it. But they're touting this poll that, according to the Wall Street Journal, by an 11-point margin, more voters see Trump rather than Biden as having a record of accomplishments as president. Some 40% said Biden has such a record, while 51% said Trump had the positive accomplishments. By an 8-point margin, more voters said Trump had a vision for the future. This is one of those moments where you go, again, I named the accomplishment. The one accomplishment, tax cuts for rich people, they got it through. What other legislative victories did they that came out? And this is one of these moments where you go, okay, you got this poll. You've got a really respected publication, the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class. This is the rich people's paper. There's got to be something here, right? Well, when you dig deep into this, what you find is this poll, the ultimate in push polls. In fact, the Trump folks gave $600,000 to the pollsters, from what I understand, to help kind of create, you know, this, so that they could then go and say, hey, look, Trump had better accomplishments, knowing that facts don't matter. It's how people feel and think and believe, not what you can prove. And I look at this and I go, you know, this is why when you look at the economic data, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the fact that unemployment's low, inflation's down, wages are going up, things are positive and happening and jobs are being created and good jobs being created. It's one of these things that makes you go, why aren't people seeing this? And it comes back to the fact that the right wing controls the vast majority of the things people see, hear, and read. And they've been doing this for years. This isn't new. You know, talk radio, cable news, you know, all of these things have been put into place and built for decades to do just what they're doing. Coming up with a BS poll and then echoing and disseminating it to the masses through respectable outlets and not so respectable ones, and giving all of the outrage merchants, you know, something to go, see, look. Because it's all about the money. It really is. It's all about the narrative that they keep pushing. Which is why you don't see them talking about, you never see Republicans talking about policy. They always talk about emotional things, narrative things. They always talk about tax. You know, this week, it's just amazing to me. You know, Tucker was talking about Obama's a crackhead, a gay crackhead. And you go, what? What orifice did Tucker pull this out of? Now, here's what he understands. He understands for his base, for a certain segment of our population, it's like high school all over again. That's all they want to hear, the attacks. And why I know this is BS, and I remember arguing about this years ago while Obama was in office, had a pastor come on the program years ago. James David Manning, his name was. I'll never, it's an interview I will never forget. because I had a pastor telling me all of these allegations about Obama and how, you know, Larry Sinclair and crack and, you know, all this stuff. And it's one of those things where I said, well, you know, pastor, you know those rules that you seem to want everywhere? Can you tell me what they are? Can you tell me those commandment things? Because I think you're breaking one of them. You know, I went to school. I learned the Ten Commandments. One of them, bearing false witness, that's one of the ten. Now, he clearly did not and could not tell me what the ten were. He wanted to read them out of the Bible. And I said, no, I don't want you to read them. I want you to tell me. Tell me how you see them. What are they? What are these rules that you hold so sacred? And, you know, the fact that you're claiming he's a crackhead. Look, I don't know any part-time crackheads. I've known people who have been addicted to crack, and it's not something you do on the weekends. Had they come up with any other drug, I'd go, yeah, maybe. But not that one. Not that one. But here's the thing. It's not about fact. It's not about reality. It's about tainting people's minds. Oh, you know, just asking questions. For instance, you got Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly. Remember Megyn Kelly was over on Fox News. Trump attacked her, something bleeding, coming out of her eyes and stuff. And then she tried to pivot to be, you know, like an actual news person. You know, tried to get a gig over at, I think it was NBC or something. She's now lunatic fringe, right-wing crazy. And now, but she's now saying, hey, look, Obama's really running the country. You know, Biden's just a puppet. You know, it's Michelle and Barack who are in the basement. And, you know, she said, you know, the reality is the reason that, you know, people really hate Michelle Obama is because she hates America. And you go, you know, explain to me why this is popping up now. It's popping up now because the economy is doing pretty good. Country's going in a positive direction. Things are getting better for people. And they can't have that. They got to keep feeding the outrage. You got to keep getting people ticked off. You throw Mike Huckabee into this mess. He just said that, you know, this could be, if Trump loses, could be the last election decided by ballots instead of bullets. And you hear this from the right all the time. And I'm going to tell you this right now. There's never going to be a bunch of militia types marching in the streets. They're cowards, the most of them. They're not going to be lining up with their ARs. They're going to talk a tough game. They're not going to do it. Because you know why? Because they're seeing what's happening to all these people who tried something on January 6th. They now know that there are consequences for stupidity. But here's the thing. What the Huckabees of the world want, what the crazy right-wingers of the world want, is that lone wolf, that one guy, that Timothy McVeigh, that extremist, that radical, that... They know who they're talking to. They're not talking to the masses. They're talking to a handful, a select few. The dim. And this is what's frightening about these people, because they don't care about you or me. They don't care about the future of this country. They don't care about if we're doing well or not. They care about their bottom line, their money. It's about the money. It's all it's about. And that's what's really sick about this. They wrap themselves in the flag and pull this false patriotism stuff, all the while cashing checks and going to the bank, because that's all it's about. And the sooner we wake up to that reality, I think the better off we're going to be. So for me, this election really important, and pointing out how well things are going, I think, is a big part of this. But also pointing out the fact that, you know, you got Trump who's promising retribution. He's promising he's going to come after anyone who disagreed with him. Me, you, us. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Get a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open.
Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Trouble Skiltskin was on the radio with Hugh Hewitt, and said he wants to debate the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle. Why would you want to debate Meghan Markle? Why? But he says here it's because he didn't like the way she dealt with the Queen. He said he became very friendly with the Queen. The Queen hated him. But she was an incredible woman at 95. She was so sharp. She was 100%. She 100% hated him. When you watch Biden, you say this is a different planet. But they treat her with the greatest disrespect, and I didn't like it. She's dead, right? Let's go to the phones. Got Kurt on line one. Kurt, how are you, man?
Okay, thank you for taking the call, first of all. But hey, the minute Meghan Markle says, just give me the time and the place, you know Trump will take that fat body of goo and run and tuck tail at Mar-a-Lago.
I don't doubt that. I think he is a coward, and you know, it is what it is.
And the biggest thing he's afraid of more than anything else, because these are the people taking him down, are strong black women.
Yep. Well, I hope she takes him up on it. I hope it happens.
I hope so, too, and I hope she calls us bluff. But what I was calling about was you were talking about Tucker Carlson in an ex interview with that dude that said he had sex with Obama and did cocaine and stuff.
Did
you
crack.
Notice the one thing crack. You notice the one thing Tucker Carlson omitted from that statement?
What's that?
He said, well, you know, I cannot believe this because he took a lie detector test. Well, he failed to mention that this dude failed that lie detector test because, you know, you can't let the facts get into the way of a good story.
No, it's a diversion. It's all about, you know, continually to push out all kinds of craziness to divert from reality. And look, it works. It works so well because, you know, most of the people that I know, That's been on their tongue. You know, Obama's running the country, and you know we're having crack. You know it's crazy.
Forbid,
it's crazy
too.
How successful it is.
And God forbid, Barack Obama didn't wear a flag lapel pin with a tan suit.
Be in front of a Muslim prayer rug curtain.
Oh, I forgot about the Muslim prayer rug. Oh, and he didn't wear his wedding ring certain times of the year because I believe there was a guy from Canton, Ohio, at a Trump rally back in 2016 saying that Barack Obama doesn't wear his wedding ring certain times of the year because that's a Muslim practice.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Well, I don't either, but this is the kind of... Of course, these are the same people who also said, I want to get down to the bottom of why Barack Obama wasn't in the office on September 11th, 2001. He was probably out playing golf, but I'd sure like to get to the bottom of why he wasn't on the job.
Yeah, I've heard that one too.
And you know, it's funny because I remember my sister, she's a big Trumpie, and I don't know where my parents went wrong with her, but anyway, we were telling her about that segment. It was actually a Daily Show segment. She goes, oh, you know they have to edit that to make those people look stupid. I don't think so, because have you ever watched any of those live rallies of rally goers on, say, Right Side Broadcast Media Network or Newsmax or anything like that? These are people that genuinely believe those kind of stupid things. I don't think that's editing. I think that's the real deal.
Kurt, we got flat earthers. There are people who believe the earth is flat now.
Exactly.
So exactly. Nothing surprises me anymore. You got anything else?
No, I'll let you go to Alice on line two.
Appreciate it. Thanks. You got it. So there you go, Alice. Kurt's brought you on. What's on your mind?
Well, all I wanted to say was, first of all, thanks, Kurt. Second of all, you know, this right wing and the Republicans and their total denial of facts. Can you imagine them involved? You know, they're on the jury duty. So we're not going to listen to facts. We're going to go with feelings. I mean, isn't our legal system set up on facts? But obviously none of that matters. last night I went to a borough meeting. Our little hamlet is run by, you know, five members, and four of them are Trump Republicans, and one of them was saying, well, I don't think anyone ought to be allowed to appeal after they've been declared guilty. And I was there, my neighbor was there, and one of our other friends was there, and he's sort of an independent. I'm liberal, and she's old conservative Republican. And we all just kind of looked at each other, shaking our heads like, okay. So, yeah, you know, there you go. Yep. But have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. The sad reality is the crazy is taking over, because evidently on that side of the aisle, basic understanding of how things work doesn't matter. It's really just out and out a popularity contest. And, you know, look, you know, we talked about, you know, Marjorie Three Names. And I pray that she's not as stupid as she looks. But I you know, the proof is what it is. When you say that, you know, during the Ice Age, she wants to know how much, during the last Ice Age, how much did government tax people? And what did governments do to melt the ice for the next Ice Age? You go, where do you go with that? When someone says something like that, where do you go? When they're that detached from any bit of historical knowledge, any bit of reason, how do you participate in any way of figuring out how to rule a country and in this wonderful experiment of self-governance? Yeah, I don't know. When facts don't matter anymore, what do you get? But here's the thing. It's well worth watching. I think we need to pay more attention, especially folks who don't vote. I think we want to pull them into reality, because understand, this next election, all of the good things that have been done on the economy front will be undone by Trump. Everything that Biden has done will immediately be undone because, well, you have to, because it's red hat, blue hat. But more importantly, it's going to be a, and I've got friends who are, you know, on the far fringe of saying, you know, it'll be the last election, Trump will make himself king, you know, all this stuff. I'm not going down that path. What he's going to do is there will be retribution. There will be, you know, this will be the new norm. Every time there's a change of power, there will be figurative blood. There will be, you know, prosecutions and all of this stuff, because he wants retribution. Now, here's the thing, and this is where I get these people say, well, they're going after Trump. They've weaponized. No, he broke the law in big, enormous ways. Our system is working exactly as it's supposed to. Now you go, well, we're going to impeach Biden. And I'm going, go ahead. In fact, you had John Fetterman who said, you know, go ahead, knock yourself out. Impeach him. Go ahead. In fact, he said, and I don't know that I can say this, John Fetterman, Senator, U.S. Senator John Fetterman said, go ahead, do it. I dare you. If you can find the votes, go ahead, because you're going to lose. It's a loser. He went on to say it would just be like a big circle jerk on the fringe right. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say that, but a U.S. senator said it. He says sometimes you got to call their BS. He said the actual word. And if they're going to threaten, then let's see it. And see, this is where, and I said this before, I said this when Marjorie Three Names is going, no, we want to have an inquiry. No, no, you don't get that. Just have an inquiry. Go do it. Introduce your articles of impeachment and impeach the guy. Go ahead. Do it. I don't know. Am I going to get in trouble for that? I mean, if you put circle in the same sentence as the jerk, we're going to find out very soon. But hey, good on Senator John Fetterman. Love that guy, especially his hoodies. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, the economy, look, doing well. Unemployment, really low. Wages are ticking up. Inflation's ticking down. In fact, Bloomberg reported today that the Fed is set to double its economic growth forecast. The Fed thinks things are going well. A lot of the Wall Street folks are thinking things are going well. In fact, they've walked away from recession. But our Republican friends doing as much as they can to ensure that, well, things, well, are not. And I still fear a shutdown, possibly, of the federal government here at the end of the month. But we'll see how this plays out. But here's the thing. We've been talking about the economy going in the right direction, things going well. I don't think we get enough positive news. That's why I've asked Emily G to come talk with us. Emily is the Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth over at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Emily, great to see you again.
Rick, thank you for having me on.
So, look, all I keep hearing is bad news from the right. The economy's terrible, the inflation's horrible. All I hear is the sky is falling. Yet when I look at the numbers and when I look at the fact that, you know, consumers are buying stuff, things, it doesn't, the numbers don't say as it's bad as what the messaging is. Why is that?
Sometimes it seems like people are almost cheerleading for a recession, for Biden to, to say the economy is bad, but the numbers, everything about the numbers points to the contrary. We have had phenomenal job growth over the past few years. The economy has gained over 13 million jobs. Unemployment has been below 4% for a long time. And we are in the midst of a big turnaround for making more things here in America. There are investments coming not just from the government in the big three pieces of economic legislation that President Biden passed, but also from the private sector trying to make more things here in America, opening new factories, and investing in things like semiconductors and electric vehicles, along right. with training more workers.
Now, I want to clarify something you said there, because, you know, the private sector's bringing jobs back, doing this. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because policy is saying, hey, this is the direction that we're going as a country. You better get on board.
This is very much, you know, both private sector action, but also something that's been spurred by the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act, two laws that were passed by Congress and signed by the president. That incentivize making more things at home. It makes a lot of sense. It gives us, you know, less supply chain disruption in the future. It makes America more competitive, which in turn can help grow the middle class, grow our economy. And it also means that that we, you know, we can create more jobs, and not only, you know, more jobs, but good jobs,
and better ones.
jobs that pay, you know, prevailing wage or even better. Jobs that can be spread all over the country.
Now, the last jobs report I saw, unemployment, you know, ticked up a bit, but that's because, not because people were getting laid off, that's because more people, I think 750,000 people came back into the workforce. So labor participation is up. If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're back to pre-pandemic labor participation numbers, right?
Right. So the unemployment rate measures essentially the number of people who don't have jobs but are looking for them. So one way you can get an increase in unemployment rate is people lose their jobs. Another reason is that people say, like, hey, this is a really good market right now. It is. It remains a very hot labor market. And so when you get people enticed to come out to work because, you know, wages are growing and there are good jobs out there, that's actually a good sign. And even though it ticked up, we are still below 4%. This is a very low unemployment rate. There is still a gap between white workers and black workers, but we're also seeing, in historic terms, a very low unemployment rate even for black Americans.
Now, with the Fed saying that, you know, they're doubling their forecast, now they've done everything they could possibly do to, in my view, to try and cause more unemployment, to try and do some things that could be painful. And even through that, the economy has soldiered forward. Are you surprised by that?
So we are seeing the economy stay strong. I think a lot of people were expecting that with this kind of job growth and this kind of investment, You know, not only from that, but also from the COVID recovery bills, that you might see the economy overheating and crashing. But in fact, what we've seen is inflation cooling. We are down to about 3.2% inflation compared to about 8.5% last July. So that is getting better, and that is all the more reason for the Fed to proceed with caution as it considers rate changes.
Now, you know, in looking at this, and look, I've had conversations with a bunch of people recently about, you know, how people feel. And, you know, I look at the numbers, and you're obviously a numbers person. You know, how do we get the numbers and the way things are trending to get into people's minds that things aren't as bad as they're being sold? Because, you know, I was reading a poll. Now, granted, the poll was funded by the Trump people, but, you know, the poll still says, you know, people think, you know, Trump did more, had more policy accomplishments than Biden. I mean, messaging wise, I think we're losing a fight.
So I am optimistic that people will come around. We have done some polling ourselves and find that, you know, it's you know, some of it isn't solidly about the numbers, the sort of big macroeconomic numbers. It is people are looking for economic security. People want to feel like the economy is growing. They want to feel like they have security for their own families. And I think overall, macroeconomic terms, things are going well. But I think we're also, thanks to these investments, in manufacturing and clean energy, we are also on the cusp of doing even better and growing the middle class more as we make more things here at home and create more jobs and grow industries in areas in which the U.S. has fallen behind, like advanced manufacturing.
And, you know, how come we don't hear more about those things? This is where I wish, you know, people would talk more about those investments that are paying off. And, you know, because I get people emailing me all the time. Well, you know, they're building this place and it's not going well. And I can't verify this. How do we get better messaging on what is actually happening and being done and the jobs that are coming out of all of this?
So some of those results are still a ways off into the future. So we're at a point where there are, you know, million or billion dollar investments being made in new semiconductor fabs and, you know, auto manufacturing plants. I think in terms of economic measurement, those are most clear in construction of manufacturing plants. You know, it'll be a while before those places are actually hiring people. But there are other ways in which we're seeing the economic policy choices of the Biden administration make a huge difference. One is lowering the cost of broadband. Another is lowering the cost of prescription drugs. You heard, a week ago now that the Biden administration released the list of first 10 prescription drugs that Medicare will be negotiating. It's the first time Medicare has been able to do that. That will lower out-of-pocket costs for people. That's something very tangible. Through the Inflation Reduction Act, they also lowered premiums for people who buy coverage on their own through the health insurance marketplaces to the tune of $800 per person.
You know, and, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about a lot here the last couple of days is the fact that, you know, this president, this administration, the most pro-union in my lifetime, at least. But the Treasury Department came out with a report, and I don't think that we needed the report. I'm glad they did it. But, you know, they came out and said, look, you know, we want to encourage people to join and form unions because there are all of these benefits, better wages, better hours, better conditions, all of this stuff. And couple that with what the Department of Labor and the NLRB has been doing. This seems to me to be a sea change in a way to help those jobs that are being created be even better jobs. Because as I've said 1,000 times, you know, all of those manufacturing jobs that we pine for, that we talk about all the time, we need those good paying manufacturing jobs. Those were crummy, crappy jobs before they were union jobs. That's what people want. That's what people are pining for. And I think the more that grows, the better that the faster that those things happen. I hope the messaging then turns around.
And I would add to that, Rick, you're absolutely right that it's, you know, it's far better for workers, as that report talked about. But when you look at the projects themselves too, when they're done with union labor, you know, the projects are more likely to get, studies have shown, more likely to get done on time. You're looking at better quality projects. And so, you know, there are reasons in it for those who are funding projects as well as actually working on the projects to want them to be union.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Emily G. Emily is the Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. Some of the other stuff that the administration's been talking about, and I want to get some of your thoughts on this. This assault on junk fees and going after these companies and going after utility bills and stuff like this. I think this is really important. I think it's a winner because I do think average everyday working people can see the benefit and will see once this stuff gets moving and in the right direction, will see the benefit in their pocketbooks and at the kitchen table. And I think this is a winner. I'm curious your thoughts.
So if you hear the president talk about the economy, there are a few different things he's trying to do. One is investments, which we've been talking about a lot over the past 10 minutes or so. A lot of it's empower workers, which I know you and I both feel very strongly about. But another is lowering costs and promoting competition. And I think that is one where the difference is, very tangible for families. It's not paying junk fees. It's having less medical debt and making sure that if a hospital offers financial assistance, that you're aware of that, you aren't kept in the dark. It's making sure that consumers aren't ripped off by banks and financial institutions. And then it's also holding big pharma accountable for giving people fair prices and Medicare fair prices for life-saving prescription drugs.
Yeah, but here's the thing that where my mind goes, Emily. All this stuff should be nonpartisan. My Republican friends say they believe in competition. Especially when you're talking about education, maybe not the economy, but they believe in competition when it suits them. This seems like something that should be nonpartisan, something that both parties should get behind. I don't understand why it's that difficult.
I think it's so polarized that they can't admit even things that if you remember back to the 2020 campaign. Trump said, after the 2016 campaign, Trump said that he was going to get Medicare to negotiate drugs, and he didn't deliver.
Right.
But Joe Biden delivered. There's nothing partisan about that.
Shock.
Enabling the government to get better prices, save taxpayers' money and save Medicare money. That shouldn't be political, but sadly it is. And you've already seen Republicans try to repeal parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, which included those drug reforms, clean energy. And they're also trying to cut funding for the IRS when we know that additional funding for compliance will help lower, will help raise revenue for the government on that.
So how do we get that message? How do we frame that? Because everyone hates the IRS. Everyone hates paying taxes. Now, look, I think it's the price of admission to be a citizen in this country. I mean, if you want roads and bridges and police departments and all the socialist stuff that we have, you got to pay for it. It's got to come from somewhere. So it's the price of admission. But you get a lot of people. We've been trained like Pavlovian dogs. You hear the IRS and people start to foam at the mouth.
So if you look closely at what is this is actually going to, some of it is to people like you and me who maybe say be owed a refund or need to refile some paperwork. I had to, it could be months or years before you heard back from the IRS, and they've turned dramatically brought down the times in which they're able to respond to people. It's a customer service function. We should be able to call and get answers. We need to know about what's happening to our money. On a household level. And it's also, if you look at who is not paying taxes and sort of not playing fair and playing by the rules, it's usually the top earners. And so IRS enforcement is going to help make sure that the wealthy and corporations pay their fair share.
No, I'm with you on this. Last line of questioning I've got for you. If you're making the elevator pitch on how well the economy is, what is that pitch? Because, I get people go to ask me all the time, okay, you say it's the economy's doing well, give me the pitch. So give me a pitch. Why is the economy doing well?
The economy is doing well because of investments that we've made in workers and investments that we're making in the American people to grow the middle class. And when the middle class grows, the economy grows as well.
There you go. Emily, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much. It's always great seeing you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Emily G, she is the vice president of senior vice president of inclusive growth there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1860. That was the day that Jane Addams was born in Cedarville, Illinois. Her family was wealthy, and her father served as a state senator. In 1881, Jane Addams visited London with her friend Allen Gates Starr. There, the two women were inspired by Toynbee Hall, a settlement house which worked with the poor and working class in the city. They decided to establish a similar effort in Chicago. They founded Hull House in an immigrant neighborhood of Italian, Greek, and Jewish workers. Hull House grew to become a complex of facilities that offered kindergarten, daycare, lectures, and cultural programs, and an important space for women trade unionists to hold meetings. The women of Hull House became one of the leading proponents for workplace safety in the nation, pushing for laws and reforms to help workers. During the 1894 Pullman workers' strike, Jane Addams visited the community and had meals with the women workers. She was able to convince the workers' strike committee to agree to sit down to arbitration, but the Pullman company officials staunchly refused to negotiate. The refusal of the company to bargain and the rising anger of the workers was an eye-opener for Jane. Later, she reflected, quote, "During all those dark days of the Pullman strike, the growth of class bitterness was most obvious." Before the strike, she wrote, quote, "There had been nothing in my experience that had revealed that distinct cleavage of society which a general strike, at least momentarily, affords." In 1931, Jane Addams was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her lifelong advocacy for working class women and children and her strong stand for peace during World War I. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the Mexican Supreme Court decriminalized abortion nationwide today, 2 years after ruling that abortion was not a crime in one northern state. It's now across the entire country. And my mind, and this is I guess maybe this is just, you know, me being me, but my mind went to this place going, this is the new tourist attraction. Hey, American women, do you need reproductive care? Come to Mexico and spend your tourism dollars here. Again, because we've got medical tourism already. People are already going to Mexico to get health care. People are going to India to get health care. So maybe this is the next jump. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you?
Hello?
Steve, how are you? What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to make a couple of points, and I think your guest hit it right on the nose with regard to who's not paying their taxes in this country. And it amazes me. I mean, we've got a group of people who are part of this uber wealthy. I'm not talking about the 1%. To be in the 1%, for people who don't know, it's about $750,000 a year. I'm not saying that's a small amount of money, but we're not talking about private jets and homes in three different countries on that kind of money. I'm talking about the uber wealthy. People with hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. And when it comes to these individuals, I mean, the tax code is already rigged in their favor. But nonetheless, you know, just goes to show you what the mindset of what greed can do to some people. Because beyond the fact that it's already rigged for you, you still have to find a way to cheat so you can keep even more of that money.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of these people have short memories, you know, or never took a history class. I mean, since the late 19th century, three times in this country's history, the left has capitalism from people who wanted to burn it down. These are people who wanted to show up with the pitchforks and the torches, you know, on the front lawns of the people who had everything. And it's only because we managed to renegotiate the social structure and economic structure in this country that said that, you know what, you still get to be rich, not quite as much, because you got to pay some more in taxes, and other people get to share in some of the wealth that they actually helped to create in this society. And guess what? We don't burn down your house and take everything.
Yeah.
And that, again, that happened several times in the 20th century. in the late 19th century. But, you know, you can push people only so far, and then it's going to happen again. And I just don't know that these people understand that. You know, sooner or later, somebody's going to wake up and say, you know, okay, you could support a family in 1969 working in a steel mill here in Chicago, and you could buy a house and go on vacation and send your kids to school. And this is one person working. Fast forward 20 years, and all of a sudden there are two people in the home working, and we're comparing incomes from those two different periods as if there's still just one person. No, this is the annual household income. And now we've actually managed to squeeze kids in there who are no longer working like when I was younger. I was like, okay, I wanted to buy my first car. Okay, you're going to have to make a contribution, according to my dad. We're talking about kids who are working to buy themselves a pair of shoes to start out the school year, to buy a jacket that they need in order to keep from freezing. So, I mean, we've run out of essentially other members of the household to throw into the workforce. So at some point, something's going to give in this country. People, you just can't use up people. Chicago is a great city, but people don't always know that a lot of the things that you look across the skyline and see were built on the backs of people whose lives were used up. Long before we had labor laws and long before we had protections, you went to work when you were 12, 13, 14 years old, and you might have died at that workplace 40 years later. And you worked 12 hours a day, and you worked 5, 6, maybe 7 days a week. And that's what built cities like Chicago and New York and a lot of other places. But again, it's the wasted lives. These people never took a vacation, never had a decent meal or medical care. You just lived and you died in misery. And is that what we really want, or do we want to fight for something better?
Yeah, but I don't think we're having that conversation yet. I think we're still hung up on all of the things that, and the wealth class has done a masterful job of funding people to keep throwing red meat at us, the outrage candy to keep us focused on other stuff. I mean, you go back to Thomas Frank's What's the Matter with Kansas? You know, his argument was they were voting on their other interests, which is the culture war, which is all of the divisive stuff. The economy came second for a lot of people, and I'm waiting for that, like you said, people to finally wake up to the reality that they've been robbed blind. That one income used to support a family really
absolutely. They're taking prayer out of schools, and they want a 3-day waiting period before I can buy a gun, and gay people and people of color might be just like everybody else. Those are the things that matter to me, not whether or not I'm going to have enough money to pay for my medication, my food, and my rent when I'm 65. You know, I mean, again, you're right. They did a masterful job of diverting attention from average people to issues which in no way, shape, or form are going to manifestly affect their lives on a daily basis, and away from those things that really do.
Yeah, I'm still shaking my head today over the Tucker Carlson, you know, reviving the Obama, you know, crackhead gay story. It's just incredible to me that we keep falling for it over and over and over again. And I know the quote attributed to Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. They're not even paying anymore. We're just doing it to ourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, whatever existed that worked for them at one time, they'll bring it back. And, of course, you know, they've managed to convince a lot of Americans that you don't need higher education. In fact, it's nothing but a place where you're sort of socialized to be, a part of some giant conspiracy to overthrow the United States by a bunch of leftists. And instead, you know, you can become a billionaire, the Mark Zuckerbergs and Musks and Bezos of the world. You know, that can just be anybody. You know, you don't need any kind of education. You don't need any kind of training. You can just miraculously become a billionaire because you're just so hardworking, because that's all you need in the world, just to be hardworking and committed, and the American dream can be yours, which is utterly ridiculous, as if our great-grandparents didn't work hard, as I alluded to earlier, when they were working 12 and 15 hours a day. Yeah, they were working hard. Nobody was paying them, and your only choice was to go down the street and get another job that was just as bad as the one you had, because there was no such thing as unions, no such thing as power, and when people did try to organize, they were murdered in the streets, literally. There's a reason why so many things in this country are named after Carnegie, because the man was directly and indirectly responsible for the murder of untold people.
You are spot on correct, and it's history and things that we need to, you know, I've been arguing for years about the education system not talking about labor's history and the fight for that, that the fight for the 8-hour day, the fight for weekends, the fight for, you know, the idea that I'm working to live, not living to work. You're spot on, Steve. I appreciate the thoughts, man. Always good stuff.
Thank you.
Seriously, I mean, you know, that's the issue for me, and it's always been. Anyone who's listened to this show longer than one day knows, it for me, it's the kitchen table economic stuff. All of that divisive stuff, don't care. I don't. I want you to lead your best life. You want to dress up and do a drag show for your friends? God bless you. You want to do any of that stuff? You have the right to do whatever it is you want to do, as long as your rights don't infringe on mine or anyone else's. And I think we got to go back to that. When my grandfather always said, "Don't worry about me. Worry about yourself." That's the mentality on those outrage issues. I think what we should be doing is fighting to make sure that we get a slice of the pie. And not the crumb. I want to hear your thoughts.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've been following what's going on down in Georgia as you've got a number of the co-defendants seeking to get their themselves severed from the others. And I got to tell you, I think if they're successful at some point in severing some of them, you know, maybe we start seeing some rats flipping. Maybe we're going to start seeing them already. But evidently, you got Eastman who's filed. You got Cheesebro. The guy's name's Cheesebro. Also, Sidney Powell, all of them. And as I understand, the judge denied Cheesebro and Powell their request. So I got to wonder what's going to happen with Eastman. But anyway, here to share some thoughts on what's going on in Georgia. Give us the lowdown, the skinny, and all of the information that we need. I've asked our good friend Greg Palast to come talk with us. Greg's a reporter known for his investigations for Rolling Stone, The Guardian, and, of course, right here at The Rick Smith Show. He's also the author of New York Times bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. His latest film, Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman, and right now filming his next documentary about the Charles Koch and the Osage Nation. Get info and the books and, well, all the films and all of the stuff at gregpalast.com. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome. I just want to warn people, if you're watching this program, please put on your masks. I've just tested positive for COVID. Now, I don't know how that happened, because my good friend Bobby Kennedy says that COVID was designed not to infect Ashkenazi Jews or Chinese. And I think I got it from my Chinese friend who just came back from China and was tested positive. Bobby, what are you telling me?
Yeah.
You asked me about Georgia. And so, as you know from my film, Georgia, Vote Suppression Hitman, for 9 years for Al Jazeera and The Guardian and Rolling Stone, I have, and of course, the Rick Smith Show, I've been investigating what's going on in Georgia and Georgia voting shenanigans in a way that the national news has utterly, totally missed and misled. And there are two big racketeering cases we need to address. One has gotten a lot of national attention, and one is almost invisible. The one that has a lot of attention, brought by Fonnie Willis, the district attorney of Fulton County, which is the core of Atlanta, is a racketeering case against Donald Trump and a dozen and a half of his co-defendants who are attempting to illegally overturn the election. In particular, what they did was, this is a crime that most people actually really don't understand what the core of the charge is, including the core of Jack Smith's charge. So let me make this clear. And I'm talking to you as a guy who was an expert for the Department of Justice on the racketeering law. And I also I've spent a lot of time in courtrooms regarding in Georgia on the special Georgia racketeering laws, which are more severe, which is what Donald Trump is charged under. And the main crime is faking the electors for the Electoral College. As you know, Rick, in our great democracy, we don't get to vote for president. we get to vote for only for these strange people we call electors.
Right.
And the electors go to the Electoral College after they've been elected, and then, which is in each state capital, and they and the Electoral College votes and chooses our president. Now, Trump's scheme was to have his electors, have Vice President Pence simply say, I'm picking Donald Trump's electors, not Joe Biden's, because there was fraud in those in certain states, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. But there's a problem with that. He couldn't get any of his own electors, Donald Trump, to go along with this because they knew it's illegal. They didn't want to sign sworn affidavits, which they send to the federal government, because this is a real crime, saying I was elect, you know, that Donald Trump won Georgia. He couldn't get anyone
right
working for any of his electors to actually run. So what they did was they made up this fake set of electors. And they had a bunch of people, a bunch of schmucks, you know, some local butchers and politicians and all these people. And by the way, you can't, it's interesting, there were some elected officials, and you can't be an elected official and be an elector, by the way, but it doesn't matter. The important thing is that these people made it up, and they signed sworn affidavits at the behest of Rudy Giuliani, at the behest of Sidney Powell, at the behest of John Eastman and all these Georgia politicians, including the state chair of the Republican Party there, who said, oh, just sign these pieces of paper saying you were elected. So people literally signed pieces of paper saying, not just pieces of paper, they signed sworn affidavits. I was elected by the people of Georgia to choose the president of the United States. And they sent those off.
Right.
Even though, and it's not like they're protesting that the vote was wrong, because that's legitimate, Rick. You can protest.
And it's been done
if
before.
You think that the election was, and it's been sure. done before. We've had several elections overturned that way. But these guys never ran. So it's like, you know, if it's, I'm in LA, so I can suddenly say, oh, I'm signing an affidavit saying I was just elected mayor of Los Angeles. Well, Palast, did you run for mayor? No, but I'm saying I'm the mayor. Now, it's a signed, sworn statement which goes to the Congress of the United States, whose purpose was to defraud the American voter,
right,
and defraud Congress.
But here's my
and
question.
That is the crime. That is the core of the charges by both Jack Smith and by Fannie Willis in Georgia. Jack Smith, the federal prosecutor, Fannie Willis, her charges, she actually indicted all of the fake electors. By the way, 8 of them have already flipped and are saying, it ain't my fault, this guy Giuliani, after all, he was a U.S. prosecutor, he's a big-name lawyer. Yep. All these big-name lawyers are telling us this was legal. Now, as you may know, Rick, ignorance of the law doesn't keep you out of the hoosegow, but they're praying it will be, that they're saying that they were victims, that they were conned by Trump and his buddies. But there was one really funny little side note today, is that one of the electors, who's a state senator, one of the phony electors, who was never elected to anything except the state senate, he said his case should be moved to federal court because he was a federal official when he signed that paper. Well, no, that's like, he's charged with being a fake elector. He was never elected. So it's like someone saying, stealing a cop's uniform and saying, you can't arrest me, I'm a cop. No, you stole a cop's uniform. That's the whole point. That's why he's in prison. He's kind of compounding his crime by saying, I was a federal official. That's another fraud. That's another 5 years in the hoosegow, buddy. So they've, and now why are they trying to get into the federal jurisdiction? The answer is that if this case is going to be handled in Atlanta, in Fulton, you'll have a substantially Democratic, African-American, young, hip Atlanta jury. You'll have an Atlanta jury. And as you can well imagine, they're jurors of color. That is the color blue, overwhelmingly. And so these guys are scared to death of a Atlanta jury. So they've asked to go to federal court. Now, once it goes to federal court, now the jury pool changes from Atlanta to all the suburban area, Atlanta plus all the big suburban areas. Now, if you see my film, Vigilante, you will see one Republican official, Pam Reardon. She personally challenged 32,000 voters' right to vote, mostly black people, almost all Democrats. 32,000 people. That's in the film Vigilante. That's what we're trying to bust that story. This woman, if they move to federal court, would be eligible to sit on the Trump jury. And she's already told me there's no way that Trump lost the election in Georgia. So if you move, she's in Cobb County. So if you move out to Cobb and Forsyth, which is known as a sundown town, that is, black people take their lives in their hands, literally, if they walk down the streets late at night. And so if you include DeKalb and Cobb and Forsyth and these white suburban counties, MAGA counties, it's going to be very difficult to get a conviction, because all you need is one single juror to say, Trump's my man, and I don't care what the evidence is. I don't care what the judge says. I don't care anything. I'm not convicting this guy. So no, that's their gambit in going to federal court.
No, that's their hope, because look, you know, the Trump supporters I know have already said they don't care what he did. They don't care what the crimes are. It doesn't matter. They would that's never right. convict him, no matter what. And what you've said is, you know, with these fake electors, I've been asking why on January 7th they weren't arrested that day, because clearly they were not the electors. So by putting those documents in, that act alone should have gotten them arrested on January 7th.
Well, number one, who was your attorney general? Even Bill Barr, who's a right-wing crypto-fascist, but he's not a full-fledged fascist, he resigned.
Right.
So there was no way that he could arrest them. The Justice Department, this guy, Cheesebro, though some people pronounce it Casebro, I actually don't know which is right, but Cheeseburger, whatever his name is, he was sent over from the Department of Justice. He should have said, Mr. President, I'm going to read you your rights, or certainly find out who these electors are. Give up their names, and I want to get them. Instead, he was helping Trump create the list of fake electors. This is a guy from the U.S. Department of Justice. Yeah. You're asking why they weren't arrested. Now, my question is, for a guy named Biden, who's our acting president, why he waited 2 years or Merrick Garland waited 2 years to impanel, to choose a special counsel.
So let me stop you here, because I got to ask. Do you think Biden is secretly behind the scenes manipulating all of this? Because I don't think the guy's got the time, the energy. I don't think he's doing this. I think it's Merrick Garland. But do you think Biden's pulling all these strings?
Oh, absolutely not. I think Biden is smart enough, because he could end up getting questioned. He's not exempt as president. He doesn't want to go under oath saying, "Oh, I talked to Merrick Garland about this." Merrick Garland. That's the problem. It's Merrick Garland. Should have immediately said, look, I don't want to be, we're new administration. I don't want to be accused of being political. I'm appointing Jack Smith right now as our independent counsel. And that's that special counsel. And I won't have anything to do with it. I'm stepping away from the case. Let the law do its job. Instead, he waited 2 years for reasons I have absolutely no idea, because, as you say, the crime was in our face on January 6th. In fact, the crime was beforehand, because before January 6th is when they were gathering these fake names. But certainly by January 21st, when Merrick Garland was in with Biden, I have no idea why he dawdled and dawdled. And now Jack Smith and Fannie Willis are rushing against the clock to finish these trials, so that, because if Trump is convicted, at least on the federal charges, there's a very strong case that he can't run for nor serve as president. Strong case. I didn't say lockup case. Strong case that he can't be president. Under the Georgia charges, they took 2 years to do because it was such an elaborate case. But that case would not affect his right to run or serve as president. I mean, he might have to serve as president from a Fulton County prison, but he would not be removed from office.
Wow, that would be a sight. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Greg Palast. Greg's an investigative journalist, New York Times bestselling author, and director of the movie Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman. All of that you can find at gregpalast.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do this. Now, here's the thing, Greg. We've been talking about, you know, what's going on with Trump and his, you know, his 18 buddies. The narrative that I get from my Trump supporter friends is, they've weaponized, you know, the legal system, because they're only going after Trump. But yet I know there's a RICO case going on in Georgia that I haven't seen any real coverage of.
That's right.
Because, you know, I keep getting, well, they don't go after the Black Lives Matter people who burn things, and yet they did. Lots of people went to jail. Lots of people got fairly lengthy sentences. But this one's kind of curious to me because the local district attorney, as I understand, didn't choose to press charges. The state came in and went after these folks in this Cop City situation. Walk me through some of this.
Okay. The city of Atlanta, which incorporates pieces of four counties and all of Fulton, they, after the killing, the police killing of a black man in Atlanta, and which is shortly after the killing of George Floyd, decided that they had a choice. You can either defund the police, reduce the police force, or refund the police, but make them go through serious training. So the city has created moved to create the Cop City, as they call it, which is basically a big training ground in the middle of a forest area in DeKalb, which is part of Atlanta. And there were hundreds of protesters came from all over the country. It was kind of like the new Standing Rock, and they protested, and just like Standing Rock, some of them smashed up some of the try to damage some of the excavating equipment to build this this police training center. And in Atlanta, they set a police car on fire. You know, there's always some crazy. It's kind of that black box people, and they did create some mayhem. But what the state did, the state just charged 61 people with racketeering, domestic terrorism, money laundering, attempted murder, on and on and on and on. 61 protesters, some people who are just literally going to a concert at the edge of the forest, a protest concert. They were at a concert. They're being charged with felony crimes that could put them in prison for 20 years, including, by the way, one of the legal observers, a lawyer from the Southern Poverty Law Center, was sent there as an observer to protect the rights of the protesters. And he is being charged with felony crime of domestic terrorism. This is a lawyer. I mean, I'm laughing, but he could be in jail for 25 years for this stuff. And what happened is that the district attorney of DeKalb said this is ridiculous. She would refuse to charge these people. She was happy to charge some with trespassing, destruction of property, etc., where that happened, and the people, the perpetrators. But they're not going after the perpetrators. They're not going after people that burned police cars. They're not going after people that smashed up equipment. They're going after protesters and lawyers and people who are just part of this protest. Now, you know, and so it's completely nuts. You have the, like I say, the local district attorney says this is not a case, but it's being brought by the attorney, this violently partisan attorney general named Carr in Georgia, with the, and talk about interference, clearly a direct interference and big applause of Brian Kemp, the governor. Now, this is the guy that MSNBC loves because supposedly he stood up to Trump. That's not true. It's an apocryphal story. It's a lie. It's nonsense. And I wish MSDNC would stop giving this guy airtime like he's a saint, when he, in fact, makes Catherine Harris look like Thomas Jefferson in terms of vote suppression. He is the worst vote suppressing governor in the nation. And he's way ahead of DeSantis, way ahead of Abbott in Texas. So this is what's going on here. This is a massive political prosecution. And one of the problems we're running into is that there's two racketeering cases, one against Trump and a far more serious case against these young protesters. You know, a lot of them, frankly, were stupid, and they shouldn't have been there. You're not going to be very popular in Georgia. You know, it's a good way to get yourself not only arrested. They're lucky that they all didn't get gunned down. One did. There was one protester who was gunned down and killed. So it wasn't a wise thing to do, and creating any damage was really stupid. But this type of political prosecution is horrific. It's criminalizing, and not only just criminalizing in a minor way, but in a major way, criminalizing protest in America.
So what do you say to the person who, you know, because I know my MAGA crowd is losing their mind, going, well, you're calling this a political persecution of these people who burned police cars, but, you know, those patriots who showed up on January 6th, you know, you're gonna prosecute them. What's the difference?
Well, one, they're not prosecuting the people who are burning the police cars. They're prosecuting the protesters. If you're going to say that's the guy that bombed a police car, destroyed public property, that person should be arrested and put in prison. Instead, they're creating this massive racketeering conspiracy of people who never even talk to each other. They're charging them with a conspiracy of people who don't know each other, never talk to each other. 6 pages of the indictment discuss that these are all, quote, anarchists. How do they know that? I don't know. That they're all anarchists. It goes through 6 pages of how anarchists are just this or these people whose philosophy is to hate government and hate cops and create mayhem. What does this have to? I mean, these are kids just protesting. Half of them don't even know what the word anarchism means. And this is so it's clearly when you have 6 pages described saying that the philosophy of this telling us about the philosophy group. And they're calling that, by the way, predicate acts of crime. So they're literally charging them with being anarchists. That's a criminal. The state of Georgia is saying that that's a criminal charge. So most of them, like I say, aren't. Most of them don't even know what that means. And the few who are with some self-described anarchist groups, it's not a crime. You can be a MAGA nut. You can join the Proud Boys. You can be all those things. You can still join the Proud Boys. It's not against the law. Committing crimes is against the law, but they're making protest criminal. And so the idea is just like when, Rick, I've had problems with YouTube and Google. They'll take down some of my stories, which I've run for Rolling Stone and Democracy Now!, because I talk about vote suppression that Brian Kemp lost the race in 2018 to Stacey Abrams. If you recalculate the vote based on the number of black people wrongly removed from the voter rolls. In fact, I went to a federal court and the judge agreed with us on this, by the way. It didn't change the outcome of the election because that's not – once you have the new person in office, that's it.
Right.
But you end up with this problem where this equivalence BS, which says, okay, on one hand, oh, look, they're charging Donald Trump and that's political, but they don't charge these protesters. Or look, they're just as bad. They got charged too. No, one actually committed a crime. That is Trump's people. There is zero question that there was a crime committed by getting fake electors to submit their names to Congress. And if Pence had gone along, we could have really had an election stolen. Whereas the other kids are basically protesters. Are there a couple people in there who've actually committed what we call crimes like destruction of property, et cetera? Yeah, well, then charge them with those crimes and let's cut this big red. It's almost like a Red Scare sweep. I haven't seen anything like this since the McCarthy era. It reminds me a lot, actually, of the Chicago 7 trial, which was also a fake conspiracy trial. So this is what they're trying to do to these protesters, turn protest into an illegal conspiracy.
Yeah, but here again, we don't hear much about this, but we do hear all of the whining and complaining. And you're right. I mean, at the end of this, these fake electors, it's right there. So the question I then come back to, what happens if you don't convict these people? What happens then?
You mean Trump's crowd?
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem because then they'll do it again. Because as we head into 2024... Believe me, if you think they've dropped the idea of using the 12th Amendment and the second article of the Constitution and the Electoral College Act, these are three laws that Trump was hoping to leverage into overturning the electoral vote. If you think they're not going to try to do that again, if they get away with this, if the jury lets them walk, they'll say, we're legitimate. We can just, we can just come up with fake electors. Okay. So, Mike Pence is, they'll say Mark Meadows is governor of North Carolina. Does he live there? No. Did he run for office? No. We don't matter. We're just saying it's true, and we'll get the courts to back us up.
Yeah,
but what I'm worried about.
But hold on. But Biden is president, and Kamala Harris is vice president. Couldn't Biden and Harris just do that?
Well, I'm very glad that when we talked about the vigilante challenges, that there were 250,000 voters challenged in Georgia by 88 Republican operatives. Not one Democrat challenged one vote. No. 88 Republicans challenged 250,000 voters. And I'm actually, whatever you might think of Biden or Harris, they did not, would not, I cannot not imagine them.
No, you're right.
Rejecting legitimate electoral vote count.
No, I'm right
it's
there with
just
you.
Inconceivable. Whatever you think of them, We just can't imagine this happening.
I'm with you. The website, gregpalast.com. You can find all of his books, all of the investigative journalists, the movies, all of that stuff. Highly suggested, gregpalast.com. Greg, as always, fascinating stuff, great stuff. Keep up the good work, and I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Will do. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, our good friend Greg Palast. Again, gregpalast.com. Make sure you check out the website. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, we're seeing a lot of strike activity going on around the country. And, you know, the strike that with the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors has been going on. And I fear going to go on probably, I had someone tell me, probably for the entire year, which is crazy to me. And again, you know, as we talked about from the beginning, there's that mindset out there by, well, or at least what was supposedly said is they're going to basically just starve people out to where they lose their homes and they lose their livelihoods and they lose everything, you know, starve them out. And it's, to me, again, this is why we need really major comprehensive labor law. And today you had New York Governor Kathy Hochul on the picket line telling strikers to hold the line. She said, you're out here promoting the rights of men and women who are being trampled on. She said, stay strong. You're fighting the right fight. And she is there with them. And that's why I've asked Bruno Amato to come talk with us. Bruno's an iron worker, a union iron worker, former congressional candidate, actor, author, and, of course, striking SAG-AFTRA member. Bruno, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are things going right now?
Well, you know, it's day 55 for the Screen Actors Guild being on strike, and it's over 4 months that the writers have been on strike. So, what you heard was correct. Like somebody leaked that, you know, their plan was basically to let it go on as long as possible until people start losing their homes. And, that's what we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with greedy, greedy people.
Now, the thing for me on this, Bruno, is, you know, I said from the beginning that this is the first battle in the new war on working people. Robotics and AI and all this new technology comes online, this is the first fight. And this is why I think everybody, I don't care what you do, you drive a truck, swing a hammer, work in an office, this is a fight that everyone should be paying attention to and everyone should be getting behind. Because if you lose this fight, if the writers and the actors lose their profession, lose their rights to their images and their work, it's, the rest of us aren't far behind.
Exactly. I mean, this AI, it's like so advanced. I think they're thinking, hey, you know, why hire people when we could have, this AI write scripts and they had background actors, agreeing to, this is early on, like agreeing to, hey, we're going to use your image, you know, forever, but like, you know, we're going to give you a day's pay. And so that's where we're at. You know, it's a crazy times. I think of it more as like our last stand. I mean, if we don't get it done now, to me, our business is going to be over. But we got a lot of people out there with us in solidarity. I mean, the Teamsters, you know, IATSE, SEIU, it really makes you feel proud to be a union member when you go on these strikes and you see these hundreds and some days thousands of us out there in front of one studio alone. It's summertime, it's hot out there, but people want to, of course, get back to work, And, you know, but we want a fair deal. I mean, you know, it's crazy, Rick, because, you know, like with these streamers nowadays, I don't know if you heard, like, the young guy that was on Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul.
Right.
You know, Breaking Bad went to Netflix, you know, and I mean, people are watching that show every single day. I mean, thousands and thousands and millions of times. This thing is being aired and aired. He's getting nothing. I mean, I worked on a little series with Kevin Hart 2 years ago, Netflix show, did great. You know, that thing's still airing every day. I mean, you can watch it. I got, like, nothing for that. It's crazy. I mean, that's how we make a living.
And it's. I think this is an important thing. You're talking about making a living. You're not Kevin Hart. I mean, you're not making millions of dollars. You're not. You're still an iron worker for as I understand. So you know this is part of your living, right?
Well, so for me, yeah. You know, I became an iron worker in 1993, and then I joined the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA before they merged back in 98. So I've been an actor, you know, I'm still a union iron worker, but I've been an active actor for like the past 25 years. And that's how I make a living. But you're right, like, you know, I think a lot of people out there think, oh, like these people in Hollywood, like they're making millions, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, like 1% of actors and probably writers are making millions. The rest are just like working class people. I mean, you know, Rick, 86% of actors in the Screen Actors Guild in SAG-AFTRA, 86% are making less than $26,000 a year, which is the amount you need to qualify just for health care.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, so that's like, you know, the majority of us are just working class people trying to make a living like everybody else.
I mean, that's, you know, and again, I don't think that message has gotten out enough. Because again, I think we all have it in our head that wow, you're in the movies. You got to be making huge money. You're on my TV set. You've got to be making, you know, the big bucks. You got to be cashing in. And yet, when I talk to a couple of people who have been in things that I have seen, they have shown me their residual checks. And well, the one I saw was for 3 cents.
Yeah, I mean, I think just this week I got one for 1 cent. You know, I mean, of course, you get other residual checks, you know, in the mail with them, you know, from shows you did years ago, whatever. But, I mean, that's what kept actors, you know, being able to survive in this business. If it weren't for, like, you know, that actors went on strike years ago to get residuals, you know, so thankfully for those people that walked the picket lines back then, that, you know, but now, like I said, like with these streamer things, you know, it's really, that's what you're making. You're making pennies. So like, you know, you see somebody on a Netflix show and you're like, wow, this guy or this girl, wow, amazing. Like, and you see them all the time, like thinking, oh, they gotta be like rich. No, they're not. They're just,
they're probably going to be. As the one person told me, you know, they're probably serving you dinner that night as you go out to the restaurant, because most of them are waiters in their off hours. So let me ask you this, Bruno, because you know, I, from what I understand, your demands, the demands that the screen actors and the writers are asking for, don't seem all that outside of bounds. What seems out of bounds and what seems kind of crazy is what the studios are expecting you guys to work for, which is free and forever. Walk me through what it is you guys are looking for, and is there any way this ends before the end of the year?
Wow, I sure hope so. You know, so right now the Writers Guild, they still have some negotiations with the AMPTP, like the whatever they are, Association Motion Pictures Television Producers. So you know, they're still in somewhat of negotiations with them. As far as like the AMPTP and SAG-AFTRA, they won't even talk to us. So there's no negotiations at all going on. So can it go to the end of the year? I sure hope not. But I mean, you know, I mean, if they keep the mentality of let's just keep this thing going for a few more months, you know, eventually a lot of these people are going to be like, Hey, let's get back to work, you know? But I don't think that's going to happen because, you know, we're really going to stand strong, because this is it. I mean, this is it, Rick. Like, if we don't get it right this time, really, it's over for everybody, for this whole entertainment business. I don't know what it'll look like, you know, if they don't come back to the bargaining table and negotiate with us. And again, we're not asking for a lot. You know, so again, it's like this AI, artificial intelligence, where, you know, we want some regulations on that, obviously. It's like the writers, you know, besides like more pay, and, you know, they want, you know, more writers in the room, you know, this way, you know, because some of these shows, you know, if they want just, you know, two writers, you know, it's like, how are you going to teach the trade to these up and coming people? And I mean, like, that's what it is. And, you know, we, you know, I wasn't a big fan of, you know, Fran Drescher when she became president of the SAG-AFTRA. And I tell you, I've been impressed, you know, especially, I don't know, I'm sure you saw the day that we, you know, announced that SAG-AFTRA was going to go on strike. She gave this speech, and it was really great and powerful, and you know, it really changed my
I'm with you. Look. I remember the first time I go, the nanny is now the president of SAG-AFTRA, and then I saw that, I'm like, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah, me too. And so there's 170 some thousand of us out there, Rick, you know, with the Screen Actors Guild, the majority of them, and then the writers, you know, it's a lot of people out of work, and it's not just us out of work. I mean, all the other businesses in LA, like, that surround, you know, all these studios, I mean, that, you know, it's affecting everybody.
Yeah. So that's not a question I've got for you, Bruno, because how can we help? I mean, I've brought this up to a bunch of my friends. I'm going, hey, you know, I framed it exactly as I did to you a minute ago. I think this is the first major battle in this AI war that is coming for all of us. You know, look, as somebody who drives a truck for a living, I know eventually, you know, technology is going to take my job, and there will be autonomous trucks running up and down the road. And I want regulation and rules in place. But that's a fight down the road. You're right now. What can people do to help?
You know, anybody can walk the picket line, Rick, you know? So, I mean, if anybody, you know, if they want to, like, get out there, you know, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to hand you a sign. And, you know, the more people out there, and the louder it is. And, you know, I mean, it's so great, because sometimes, I mean, of course, you don't feel great that you're on strike, because, you know, you'd rather be working. But, you know, I mean, like, cars driving by, people to me, it just seems like almost everybody is, you know, backing us. And
that sense of solidarity.
And as far as, like, helping, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, bigger name actors, like, you know, the Rock and J-Lo and Ben Affleck, and, you know, a bunch have donated, you know, millions towards, like, I think it's called the Entertainment Fund. They changed the name of it, but something like that, you know. And I mean, that really is to help writers and actors that are, you know, literally going to lose their apartment, you know, can't afford food. I mean, they have food drives now that, you know, the people that aren't, you know, just can't afford to live anymore, you know, have to. They're helping out in so many ways. It's, you know, it's really, it's good to see. But you know what, Rick, like, this to me is like the summer of strikes. I mean, you know, the UAW, I think, is about to go on strike. You know, the flight attendants, you know, UPS just settled, whatever, you know, I ain't got to tell you. I mean, you talk about it every night, but it's just like greedy. Just one other thing, Rick, you know, so I think what the total ask of, like, for them to really pay, you know, the amount that I think the writers were looking for, I think if you added up everything, it came out to like $140 million, which I guess sounds like a lot. Like, Zaslav, the guy that runs Warner Brothers, I think he makes $400 million a year. Jeez. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's not a lot. I mean, really, I think we're asking them to give an extra, it's like 0.01%. They don't want to.
And this is why, again, I'm with you guys. I think all of us should be adopting a striker, because at the end of the day, we've got to get you through this. And on the other side, one day longer, one day stronger. Bruno, I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on. I wish you the best, and all the folks who are on that picket line, wish you the best, guy.
Rick, thank you so much. I just want to say real quick, happy 18 years, brother, for all you're doing for labor all these years. It's amazing. And I wish I could have Zoomed with you. I tried.
Next time.
You know, I would love to see you face-to-face, but, you know, next time I'll work on my phone, since I'm not too technically when it comes to the phone. Yeah, I don't know what. I updated. I did everything they asked, and it's still, I can't Zoom.
Yeah, well, they're not back in the office yet. But Bruno Amato, I appreciate you taking time. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you, brother.
I'll tell you, I give these folks credit. You know, I've been on strike. I know how difficult it is, but they're fighting the right fight. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. The Packing House Workers Organizing Committee, part of the CIO, and Armour & Company signed a master contract. This was the first such contract in the meatpacking industry. Within 2 years, three other major meatpackers also signed agreements with the union. By 1943, the United Packing House Workers of America represented over 60% of the country's packing house workers. Two earlier efforts to unionize meatpackers had not been successful. The Amalgamated Meat Cutters and Butcher Workmen of North America was the first national organization dedicated to the unionization of the meat industry. Between 1900 and 1904, this union focused primarily on organizing skilled butchers. A 1904 strike proved disastrous. The meatpacking companies used African Americans and immigrant workers as strike breakers. Black workers had been barred from participation and leadership in the union. The second wave of unionization occurred when the U.S. entered World War I, and Southern African Americans began to migrate to Chicago. The Chicago Federation of Labor began another organizing campaign in the stockyards. Many black workers were hesitant to support what they saw as the white man's union. During the 1921 strike, management again tried to thwart workers' solidarity along the lines of race. The strike failed. Many strike leaders were blacklisted for life from working in the industry. The Packing House Workers Organizing Committee recognized that they must be more inclusive in order to unite workers. The union organized both skilled and unskilled workers and across racial and ethnic lines. When this union rebranded itself as the United Packing House Workers of America, its headquarters were in Chicago. The union's new approach to organizing resulted in the first master contract for the industry. It stands as a reminder of what true solidarity can accomplish. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. So the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, Tommy Tuberville, trying to make a defense of him holding up all of the military promotions and all of the folks who are supposed to be leading our military, because he's the abortion thing, man. But he tweeted out today that, you know, my holds are not affecting national security, no matter what national pundits are saying. Yeah, it is. I've talked to military people. It is. When you don't have the continuity of things moving along, you don't have the machine running, it sends a bad message. And what we're projecting globally, not good. One guy, one dumb guy in the Senate is doing all this. Just another example of how screwed up our system can be. Let's go to the phones. I've got John on from Wisconsin on line one. John, how are you today?
Oh, thanks, Rick. Just fine.
Appreciate you holding.
I'm wondering, you know, you hear the Republican AG and in Georgia. He's basically weaponizing his Justice Department. The Republicans are tried to overturn an election with election fraud, really, fraudulent electors. And they're screaming that the Democrats are doing this. Minister of Propaganda, Josef Goebbels, said, accuse the other side of that of which you are responsible. What amazes me about this whole thing is the fact that we have, there's so much, the extremists in the Republican Party, you have 30, 40, 50% of them, but we've also got to have a large number of so-called independent voters who've been convinced that this is political persecution against Trump and the Republicans. They're convinced that January 6th was no big deal. And if that, they must be, because if Biden and Trump in the polls are neck and neck, it just blows my mind. It amazes me totally that anybody except an extreme cultist would be voting for this guy. And I guess my question is, how can that possibly be explained?
I think it's simple. You know, the reality is the right has built an incredible messaging machine, an incredible echo chamber over the last, 50, 60 years. I mean, you go back to the Powell memo and their talk about taking over media, taking over educational institutions, taking over, political arms, creating this ecosystem of think tanks, the state policy network that goes on across this country, to where they create their own reality and they have a media structure that echoes that. They have created their own alternative world and they've been doing it for years. So a lot of it comes down to where people are getting their news and their information and what's being sold to them. Look, I mean, you got Tucker Carlson talking about Obama being gay and doing crack. You got Megyn Kelly talking about, Obama's running the country from the basement. You've got people who aren't serious and they aren't in the real world, but what they are doing is making a lot of money. And sadly, the people who are paying attention to them are falling for it. Now, the weird thing to me is I know Trump supporters who know he's guilty. They just don't care. So there's a bunch here. There's the part of, my guy, my team, my red hat. There's that. But there's also we've been fed so much BS over the years that sadly, it comes down to, where do you get your news and your information? And I think that's a huge problem, because the left did not do well in competing in talk radio or cable news, for that matter. And they got to do better. We've got to do much better in informing people and having discussions and debates and all of this. That's my answer, John.
One thing that I think has to happen, somebody, Biden himself would be the best, but I don't know if he has the energy for it, but somebody in the Democratic Party has got to, on a regular basis, get on TV, get on the radio, and tell what the actual situation is. Tell the truth and also point out all the accomplishments that Biden and his administration have done.
Yep. He should be hammering. I said this from day one. When they passed the infrastructure bill, I said, day one, I said, when these projects start happening, I want to see 20-foot cardboard cutouts of that stupid thing that idiots were putting on the gas pumps going, Biden did that. I want that at every one of those construction sites going, yeah, Biden did that. Every time we replace a bridge or a road or we put broadband into rural communities, Biden did that. They should be doing a much better job. Look, say what you want about Trump, but the reality is, Trump knows how to promote Trump. They know how to promote something. If Trump had just one of the accomplishments Biden had, it'd been the greatest thing ever. So Democrats have got to do a much better job of tooting their own horn and taking credit for stuff. At least that's my thoughts. Last word, John. You got a thought? One thing.
No, I agree with you 100% on the Democrats have to promote themselves better. I still think it needs to be more publicized. We need to have things like video clips repeatedly shown of this craziness that took place on January 6th. Stuff like that.
Yep.
That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, John. Appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks so much. No, this is what I've been saying for, well, you know, all 18 years of doing this show. Democrats do a terrible job of selling what they've done. Labor does the same thing. Labor does a terrible job of talking about how they make lives better. There should have been every day, you know, someone out there going, look what we've done. Look at the lives we've made better. And I'm hoping the administration does this. I'm hoping it's coming, seeing signs, trickles. But the reality is we working people have got to step forward and talk about lives getting better. It's that simple to me. But, you know, I go back to, you know, the right wing built a massive, massive infrastructure of divisive, you know, when we were doing our tour in every state we went to, everyone agreed, talk radio radicalized those areas. We need to claw that back. But I appreciate you tuning in. Thanks for being here. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. You've got something on your mind, something I said got under your skin, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.